I think, I mean, it's preparing, so you never really know, but I'm gonna go with right now. Here we go. All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to another Tuesday afternoon chat with myself, Angie Atkinson, and Dana Morningstar. Dana, welcome back.
Great to be back.
Ooh, always happy to have you. Okay, now my talk. Hearing myself in my ears, never good. Okay. All right. So Dana and I do this stream, for those of you who are new around here, every week, usually on Tuesdays, we alternate channels. Sometimes for 1 week we'll be here, and like next week, we'll be over at her channel, Thrive After Abuse. And if you don't know Dana, which I'm guessing that you do, but just in case you don't, you can find her all around the internet at Thrive After Abuse, here on YouTube, on Twitter, Facebook, etc., and thriveafterabuse.com. So make sure you check her out if you haven't already. Today, we thought we would talk about narcissists and money, as in financial abuse and the related topics. And this can go one of two ways, or, well, in my opinion, it can either go where the narcissist controls all the money because they're the one earning all the money. They force you to stay home, or they minimize you or take your money so they have control. Or goes the other way, where they don't make any money and they spend all of yours. And there are lots of variations on that, both of those. So if welcome to everybody coming into the chat. Dana, what are your thoughts on narcissists and money, just in general?
Yeah, well, like you were saying, you know, it kind of runs this spectrum between, you know, there's different ways that their selfishness can come across. Either they don't want you to work, or they expect you to work at least one job, maybe two or three, and then answer to them about how you spend your money. They might put you on a budget. They might take all of your money. They might get both of you deep in debt.
Yep.
Financial abuse is a thing, and it's very common in relationships with narcissistic people. Mm-hmm. There's just kind of this blatant disregard for other people in general, and this is just one of many ways that that level of disregard comes across.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I know, like, here's an example. With my ex-husband, he didn't make as much as I made, and it wasn't that he was necessarily, you know, taking my money or anything like that, but for one example, when I moved out of the house, I left him, I sat down with him before I did, and I showed him how to pay the bills because he didn't know. And I explained to him how much he needed to make per hour, which was, at the time, he could get by with a reasonable job. You know, he didn't need much. And anyway, put the bills in his name because they had all been in my name. Well, when I left, he ran the bills up in his name, and then somehow managed to switch them back into my name. And when I tried to, like, take legal action on that later, because I didn't find out until I tried to buy a house a year later, they basically told me that there was nothing I could do because I had been legally married to him at the time. It took me about almost a year to get divorced. And so I ended up having to pay all of those bills off before I was allowed to buy my house. And that was pretty crappy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Oh, suddenly you sound a lot better to me.
Yes, I'm sorry. I had my microphone in the wrong setting.
Oh, so that makes more sense.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, cool. Yeah, so that's kind of what my own experience was. Oh, yeah, Rox Brown agrees. More volume. Okay. Yeah. So did you ever experience personally anything like that, or was it not an issue in your relationships?
Well, it came close to being a big issue, and my relationship with my first ex, with Jack. If you guys are familiar at all with my story, everything went from this amazing seemingly relationship to I started feeling funny, and then started finding out he had this double life that he'd been living since day one. Kind of long story short, our big plan was to open up a business together, and we were going to do kind of like this tiny home type thing before tiny homes were super huge. Yeah. But it would have been me and all of my credit and everything, my finances, paying for it. And so, I think when he was realizing that it wasn't happening fast enough, or that there's potential that it wasn't going to happen, then it was sort of like, well, I became an obstacle to get rid of. Yeah. And then there was, I really do think that he was either, yeah, I think he was intending to kill me. So, over money. And so the big lesson, and then that sent me in this very, there was a mad scramble that I was in for a long time after that. But one of the first things I did, because I didn't know like the level of deception that I was dealing with. But I knew that if like what I did know was so outrageous and so outside the realm of normal behavior, it was very clear that I'd gotten caught up with a con man and that he didn't care about me at all and that he didn't even like me. It was just all an act. And so I had to really go into self-protective mode. And I encourage other people to do the same. You know, there's websites like Credit Karma, creditkarma.com. It's free. And you can go on there, enter in, you know, your social, and it'll pull up your credit reports. And it's, you can check it as many times as you want for free. It doesn't impact your credit score. It's good. It's a good thing to get in the habit of doing at a minimum, I would say like 4 times a year. So quarterly. But if you're going through a divorce or you've been legally connected, like Angie, like your situation with another person who, you know, kind of has this like reckless disregard for money, or there's potential that they've racked up debt that you don't know about, it'll show up on like a Credit Karma type report. So
no doubt. Yeah. I use something called Credit Sesame. And the only reason I use that one, and this, let me just say, this particular mention is not sponsored, but a couple of years ago, they sponsored a video of mine. And so I had to test it out for, you know, the free version. I've never not used the free version, but in doing that, like I've always used, I never paid for it. But in that free, just in the free version, I have managed to take my credit score up by like almost 100 points after going through all of that. So it definitely works. And it is free. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same setup. I tried Credit Karma as well. But I guess, I don't know, if I think I had personally had better luck with this other site, but it literally, that if you make it a goal, it's so you really can not only can you find out what people might have put on you, but you can also raise your own credit. And that was something that, you know, I do recommend people, if you know you're, I'm not saying people to you, I'm saying two people. I recommend two people that if they know they're going to leave, then they check their credit and get it in order before they go, because you need it. You know, you need it to get an apartment or a house. You need it for a number of other things. And so it's helpful, you know. I was just thinking about what, as you were talking about your situation with the business, I know one couple who the man refuses to work, and that would be great if he would like be a super good father and stay home, take care of the kids. But this woman pays for daycare and the husband doesn't work and basically just plays all the time and doesn't have any goals or aspirations, and then complains at her about money and wanting to spend more of her money than she wants to allow him to spend. And it's just, you know, I see that as a form of financial abuse, as we already kind of touched on. And then I've seen also people, and this actually happened to me with a particular narcissist in my life when I was in my early 20s and I had just left my ex-husband. I was looking for a way to, daycare was outrageously expensive and I wasn't making like big bucks, you know, at the time. And so I didn't know how I was gonna, and then the divorce papers, you know, basically the child support that I was awarded was less than the cost of just daycare, not to mention food and housing and all that. So I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I tried to get help from the government. They were like, oh no, you're making too much money. And I was making some ridiculously low amount at the time, considering, you know, but they ended up essentially, my parents offered to help pay, but then they put all of these restrictions. So they paid half of the daycare for a year or two. But then in order to get them to do that, I needed to go to church with them and I needed to do all these extra things that were not, you know, things I wanted to do. I did them because I needed to do what I needed to do. I took the cookies, as Grannon used to say, or took the chocolate, I think he called it. But I didn't fully understand what I was dealing with at the time, obviously. But that's another way they do it. They give you help and then they require payback, so to speak. So I thought I'd throw those out there, yes, in case they were helpful. Anyway, are you looking in the chat right now? Have you looked in there yet?
I haven't come across a question. I've come across a few comments. Here's one from, okay, Sherry, who says, my narcissist has money. He just spends it all on him, toys, cars, etc. He doesn't spend a dime on anyone else. And that's,
yeah,
you without see that, getting into it, that's, I've lived that. And I, yes.
You can get into it if you have a story that will help. I mean, by all means.
Oh, yeah. I just
don't want to talk about it.
I don't know. It's tough. Yeah, I guess I'll just say, like, I grew up where there was never any money for, it was the weirdest thing. I didn't understand growing up. I never understood, like, where was my family socioeconomically? Like, were we middle class or were we poor? Mm. I just didn't understand. And because there wasn't this priority, yeah, on kind of, I would say, like, basic necessities. And yeah, so there were just a lot of, like, I ran around in clothes that didn't fit or that were stinky, or, I mean, it's just, I look back and I just think there's no excuse for that. And, you know, getting older and now being an adult, and I kind of realized the mindset both my parents are coming from, but, you know, my dad especially had money for everything that he wanted to spend money on. And my mom lived this with her father. She, one of her father was a narcissist, and he was a piece of work. He drove that family so far into debt and kept them poor. He wanted to be, he was a minister, and, so doing the Lord's work, and except he was sleeping with everybody in the congregation, oh, and no, would get chased out of congregations. And so they were moving around, and my grandmother was a stay-at-home mom, and, they were literally dirt poor. They'd have people, he'd spend all the money, whatever money he made, on taking out other women.
Wow.
While his wife and kids, while they had strangers leaving food on their doorstep because they didn't have food. And my mom, it makes me want to cry. It's so sad. She, her mom took her shopping when she was a kid for a new dress for school, because she desperately needed one. And of course, it wasn't anything extravagant. My grandmother, that was not even on her radar of possibility ever, and bought my mom a little dress. And then her dad came home and was upset that she'd spent the money on this dress because they couldn't afford it. Because obviously, you know, he had women he had to be courting. So he made her return the dress.
Oh my goodness.
And here's the kicker. So about 2 months later, he pulls up into the driveway with a brand new car that he bought for himself that they didn't need.
That is horrible.
Yeah. Just horrible. A selfish jerk to the nth degree. So, yeah.
That's awful. That's absolutely awful. I mean, I can't, you know, I remember growing up, I never went without anything I needed. Let me just say that. I'm going to put it out there. Give them credit where it's due. I had food. I had clothing. I had all the things. And then my clothes were clean, by the way, all mm-hmm. the things, because my mother was obsessive. But but I remember, like, always being feeling like, and I grew up with this feeling, and it wasn't until probably the last 10 years that I got over it. I grew up with always take the least of which you can take, or take the cheapest of which you can take, or take the crumbs of someone else. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, so I grew up thinking I didn't deserve nice things, basically. Not that, again, I had all the things I needed. The house was clean. The food was there. It doesn't even matter. I'm being transparent. I'm not going to sit here and make it, you know what I mean? But, but there were other major issues, obviously. So the needs were provided for. But it was, yeah, I knew that I didn't deserve nice things. And so I spent my whole life until the last maybe 15 years where I was aware that it was okay for me to A, make money that I could spend on myself sometimes, you know, as long as all my bills are paid. And to, you know, that if I wanted the nicer thing, I could buy the nicer thing if I could afford the nicer thing and still pay the bills for the things. You know what I mean? Like the other things. So it sounds really small and stupid almost to say that, but certainly there are some issues there. Anyway, I wonder how many of us have felt we didn't deserve nice things even when we could afford to buy them for ourselves. You know what I mean? Because of the same thing. Did you ever feel like that at all?
Yes. In little ways and in big ways. And it's interesting. It's interesting. So like my brother and I grew up, we were together for about 13 years and then my parents divorced and then we lived in different states. And so my brother grew up with my dad who had quite a bit of money. And I grew up with my mom who was terrified of never having enough.
Right.
And it's interesting because even still when we get together as adults, the way we handle our money and just little things like what we order off the menu, everything is just different, you know?
Yeah.
Or when we go grocery shopping, you know, he'll go to the grocery stores that are kind of in his neighborhood. And I'm like, what are you rich? Like, are you nuts? Like, no, we need to go to, you know, to the Safeway or the HEB, you know, a couple miles away. Like I'm not paying, you know, $6 for eggs or whatever it is. And, yeah, so there are those differences. And that was a big kind of shift for me too, with, raising my standards and just kind of reprioritizing things in my life. And I remember shortly after that relationship with Jack ended, going grocery shopping. And it was such a moment of like reclaiming my worth almost, of spending, buying good coffee, coffee that I really enjoyed. And
spending
the extra couple bucks on a container of coffee. And, just being like, hey, you know what? I'll just refigure my budget a little bit and the $2 will come from somewhere else. But I'm going to make this a priority because I really, really enjoy coffee. Like I'm willing to settle on maybe laundry detergent or something else, but not coffee.
Yeah.
And that was like a big step. So it's weird how money is such a sign of so many other things.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I can relate to that. I used to, you know, only shop around here. The cheap stores are like Aldi and Save a Lot and things like that. And I used to shop those stores. Or if I went to the regular stores, I would just buy all the generic things. And yeah. And now I think I've always been a little bit of a coffee snob. And so I think I always bought the best coffee I could afford, or I should say the best coffee that I like, because sometimes the coffee I like is not the most expensive coffee.
Right.
You know?
That's very true.
Yeah. So, but other things like, I have very sensitive skin. I know you're shocked. And so I like need a certain type of detergent. And so like, I would use cheap, whatever, you know, I'm just saying I can relate to all of that. And then I got to the point, now I'm to the point where I just shop where and when it's convenient for me. And I buy the things I want to buy for the most part as long as I can afford to do that. You know, I like to pay my bills, but I like to feel comfortable and not stress out about money, you know? And so I always want to have everything paid, but it took me a long time to recognize a couple of things. Like number one, that, you know, the more you stress about money, the less money you seem to have. And some people might tell you that's because you have less money. But what I've noticed is when I trust and I stay open and I remember money's just energy. That's what I tell myself. Mm-hmm. Then I do a lot better. You know what I mean? But I had major issues around it. Like you said, forever. You said something that made me think, I can't even think of it. Oh, I know something. Here's an example. So I didn't get my first brand new car until I was like 2011. What's this? It was 2011. Okay. I was old enough. I was 35, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Oh yeah. It was right after I went no contact with my mother. Imagine that. Anyway, when it happened, I heard through the grapevine that And let me tell you something. I did not buy a big fancy car. I bought a Nissan. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it was brand new. And I'd never owned a brand new car before. I had plans to buy one before I had my first child, but then my 5-year plan was destroyed by that child. Anyway, I'm playing around, but no, that was my second kid. Anyway, point is, I bought a Nissan. My mother heard through the grapevine that I bought a brand new car. And I heard from my cousin that she said, how can they even afford that car? And, you know, all this stuff. And first of all, again, it was not an expensive car. It was a very good deal. But it was proof of basically, like, who do they think they are buying a car is what I heard. And, like, a new car instead of a used car. And it was, to me, it was a practical choice. It came with a warranty. It had, you know, it was like 20 miles on it by the time I got it, which was probably just from a test drive or two, maybe my own. You know what I mean? All these other things. And so, like, it was a smart choice, because to this day, knock on wood, the car hasn't broken down and I still have it, you know? But my mother was so offended by the idea that we bought this brand new car that was a practical choice. And I think it was, and this was evidence of her perception of me. I mean, again, please remember, I was over 30 and I was married and we were fine financially. We were doing fine. But in my head, even at that point in my head, I kept thinking, like, I shouldn't be doing this. You know what I mean? I felt poor, even though we weren't poor anymore. You know, we had worked up and gotten ourselves to a place where we could at least pay the bills and buy the food and still have a couple bucks left over. You know what I mean? And for this to be her response, I think was evident. It was evident that this is why it was a big moment for me to recognize, I guess, is my point. It was an aha moment when I heard this rumor, or it wasn't a rumor. It was a grapevine thing, but basically to hear, like, her be so shocked that we could afford to buy a reasonably priced car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And be almost offended. She was almost offended by it. Like, who do they think they are? You know, and it's not like she was poor. She wasn't, you know, she was doing just fine. She'd bought new cars many times by then, you know? So it was interesting. Tell me.
Yeah, and it can really kind of mess with your head too. Because when other people are kind of looking at you like, well, what are you doing? Or that's weird. Or how could you do that? And then it on some level, it can kind of mess with you. And you think, well, I don't know. Like, is this extravagant? Or am like, do I not deserve this? It goes back to what you said that one time a while back about not feeling like a real person.
Yes.
Like these real people things, like, oh, you know, a house or a car or a job, or like, none of that's reserved for you.
Yeah.
Right. And like, whatever you do, it's not right, or it's not enough, or it's somehow just bad or wrong. And it just grinds you down.
It really does. And I think what it comes down to is some kind of, in that situation, I think it was an issue of, she was worried that I might be better than her at some point. And I know that sounds weird, but later we bought a house in a subdivision that was a newer subdivision than hers, near hers. And it was, the house was bigger than her house, and a different, you know, a more up-to-date floor plan, I guess, you know, higher ceilings and extra skylights and all this kind of stuff. And we still own that house, but she was like, I heard things. It was not good. And again, it's back to, who do they think they are? You know, and again, we were in our 30s. We had, actually, we were, he was in his 40s by then. I was still in my 30s, barely. And, you know, and he, and it just, it was such, so offensive to her, the idea that we could possibly afford a house near their neighborhood. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that it was bigger than theirs. And, oh, but I still like my house better is what I heard. Like, I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my point is, I believe that it was her own insecurity feeding that situation.
Yeah.
I think when we're talking about in a romantic relationship, in a marriage, in a partnership like that, a lot of times we're looking at, and even in that, even when, like with her, with the daycare money, the control factor, right? And so I think when the person, whether they're giving you daycare money, or they're help, you know, they're paying your bills while you take care of their house and their kids or whatever. That's about what I've seen in many toxic people, is that sense of, well, I'm the one in control of the money, so therefore I'm the one in control of you. And this is why a lot of us get stuck, right, in those relationships. I'm sure there are people here who are stuck right now because somebody's controlling the money. Yep. Or, you know, and then I see these women and men who are paying for everything while the other person sits on their butt and does nothing and complains at them and controls their money that way too. And I just think, you know, and I think in those situations, I want to say, throw them out, you know, but yeah. I know it's not so easy. I'm not pretending that it is, but that's my first instinct in those situations. But then they make themselves, you know, more indisposable in other ways. Like they don't allow, what's it, you know, they take care of the kid or not, or they do something for the person. They, you know, anyway, or maybe they just make them feel like they're so not good enough that they can't get anyone else. And
I think that's really common.
Yeah.
You know, nobody else is going to put up with you. And it's difficult too, if there are times that there's kind of kernels of truth, mm-hmm. Within their criticism.
For sure.
So like for example, here in the chat, Ashley's saying she used to cry doing the bills each month because he would go down each item on the grocery store receipt and criticize it. And then he would start a huge fight about her not wanting to go to the grocery store. And I can see that, where a person's going through the receipt and they're saying, oh, well, you could have bought this instead, or this was too much, or we had a coupon, and they're micromanaging your every move. There can be truth to that. Okay, you could have done things different,
sure.
Right? But it's also okay to be like, here's the deal. If I'm going to do this, if I'm going to take over the grocery shopping, then I'm going to do it my way. And I don't want to hear about it.
Right.
Like, here's the budget we have. And if you're that concerned about every single thing and you're going to do it different, then you take it over. Yeah. Cause I'm done. Like, I can't live like this. I can't be micromanaged. And I see a lot of people, and I grew up with it, you know, where people think, okay, well, I just need to communicate more effectively, right? Like, I'm just going to keep bringing this up to my partner and trying to explain why that's not okay. And it doesn't work for me, and it's controlling, and to get off my back. And this, there comes a point with setting boundaries where you stop talking about it.
Yeah.
They get it. The issue isn't communication. They
right.
get it. It's right. a power struggle. They want you to yep. do things their way. And you know, I've mentioned this before, but man, it was absolutely game changing for me across the board to make my new standards. Like, I don't stay in situations that cause me mental anguish or perpetual confusion. Mm-hmm. If I'm walking on eggshells, if it's anxiety inducing, I got to get out of there. Like, something's got to give.
Same.
It either needs to be resolved and get better, or I need to leave, whatever leaving might be.
Yeah.
Either they take over grocery shopping, or, like, I leave the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to just sit here and just be agitated until I have a breakdown.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. It's funny when I first, you know, I want to point something out really quick. It's silly, but bargains, I'm still a big fan of those. I still don't, you know, I don't like to spend money if I don't need to spend it, you know? So like, if I, and in fact, for example, I love Coach purses, right? If I can find an authentic Coach purse that looks new but isn't new, I will buy it before I will buy a new one. You know what I'm saying? Or something else, you know, I mean, so I wanted to clarify that. But I'm totally, mm-hmm. totally with you on that.
I also wanted to clarify that I still love Aldi.
Me too.
That's my favorite grocery store outside of Trader Joe's.
I do. Yeah, we don't have Trader Joe's. Well, we do, mm-hmm. but not mm-hmm. right here. But I do like Aldi too. And they have, actually, Aldi is a lot. Well, you know, Aldi and Trader Joe's are connected, right?
Yeah. I think it's like brothers.
Brothers, yeah.
And family members, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the German grocery store mm-hmm. setup or something. But yeah, I like Aldi too. I'm not mad at Aldi. I've bought some, and sometimes Aldi has things other places don't, like some international foods and things like that. And I think their quality is significantly increased over the years, personally.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Shout out to Aldi.
Hey, not sponsored. Let's put it out there. Hashtag. Yeah. Okay. yeah. All right. Let's see here. I'm looking to see if we have questions. Guys, if you have questions, throw them in the chat now. You can hashtag question if you want. Let's see.
Let's see. Here's a comment from Monica. She says, okay. My husband used to micromanage me in that way. And when I would tell him to do it himself, he would say, well, then what do I need you for? Ugh. I felt like I could never do anything right, no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't you. That was him. And honestly, in that case, you probably would have, it wouldn't have mattered if you were absolutely 100% on point with whatever he wanted. He would have found a way to not be happy with it. So don't take it personally as much. I know it's hard not to, trust me, but
yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. I guess some more lessons learned in all of this is the importance of being able to work as a team. You know, getting married to somebody, love is not enough.
That's right.
And it's really being able to work as a team and the ability to negotiate and to resolve issues, because life is stressful. You know, there's so many unpredictable things, like pandemics and disease and all kinds of stuff that happens outside of our control. And, but if there's issues within the family where there's just not that ability to negotiate or work as a team, you know, this relationship is on borrowed time, basically, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And nobody wants to be, you know, yeah. Okay. I have a comment from Jamila. She says, I separated from the narcissist. I left. He took all the furniture, hid it, and told the judge I took it. Now I'm getting a bill for the couch he took and quit paying for after he took it. So basically, this is one way someone's financially abusing her. Mm-hmm. She obviously got away. I'm sorry, Jamila. That is, and see, this is kind of what happened to me with my ex, where he ran all the bills up. I was not even living there and I could prove it, but it didn't matter. I still had to pay the bills because he put them in my name after I left, after I put them back in his name, or I put them in his name in the first place. I don't know why they would even do that. I don't know how he managed to do that, but very frustrating. Yeah.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things too. I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Angie, where a lot of people get guilted into kind of situations like this promises. It's awkward. It's awkward under the best of terms, kind of having these confrontations with people breaking up, even if the relationship was wonderful and things just didn't have a future together, it's still super awkward. And so people do tend to kind of want to be like, okay, they say that they'll pay for this. I'm just going to hope that they will. And I'll just leave it here because I really just want to be done. But especially if you're dealing with a narcissist or any person who's shown that they have a pattern of kind of lacking empathy and lacking remorse and lacking accountability, they will have even less so now. So, and I've seen them where they guilt people into, oh, we don't need to go through the courts for child support, right? Like, I'll just pay you. And if you question that, then, oh, you're a gold digger, right? Or why are you so greedy, kind of a thing. Or if you want to put something in writing and say, okay, if you're going to take the car that's in my name, which here's my whole thing. Err on the side of caution and don't give them any type of power to where, like, give them time to pay back a loan or to give them assets, because everything is a power and control struggle with them. And odds are you're not going to get it back, or you're going to get it back damaged.
Right.
So try to get what you can that's yours back right away, and not hope that they're all of a sudden going to grow a conscience and start acting right, because they're not. And
right.
Or the odds are that they won't. And so then you're putting yourself in a bind. So and you can blame it on, say, your attorney told you to do it this way, or somebody else recommended you do it this way if you need to, but really got to put yourself first and foremost, and not separate things in a way where they can't have power over you. So, like, let's say, for example, if y'all have a joint cell phone plan and it's in their name, And they say, okay, yeah, I'll just keep paying it, or I'll keep paying the mortgage. You just give me half or whatever. Don't be surprised when you find out, oh, they haven't been paying the mortgage and now the house is in foreclosure and you've already given them thousands of dollars every month. Like, you're never going to see it again.
Yeah.
Or, can't trust. Right. You can't trust them. So just know that.
And they will do things like that to hurt you, even if it hurts themselves in the process. So be aware.
Yes. Yes, they will.
Yeah. Ponderosa 718 says, what advice would you give someone to help cope with the money lost by a narcissistic ex? They owe you money. They don't pay you back. And honestly, I think this is going to be harsh, but I'm just going to be real with you. If you're already out of there, I would not expect the money back. I would work from the assumption that you're not going to get it unless there's a legal way you can take it. Right. And in some cases there are legal things you can do, but if you don't have anything in writing and you can't prove it, you're probably not getting it back. And even if you do have it in writing and you can prove it, unless a judge orders like a paycheck,
garnishment.
Yeah. Garnishment, mm-hmm. Then you're probably not going to get it back. And so what I would advise you to do is to work from that assumption. If you can't leave, you know, if you can't leave the house yet, you could go to, you know, do there are a lot of different companies that will hire you to work from home now. I mean, everybody who works for me works from home, you know, and the same for, you know, many MasterCard I know has people where everybody has people working from home now, but there are lots of things you could do as long as you have a laptop and, you know, a high school diploma, even in many cases, you know, or there are tons of things you can do. So I would start with something like that, even if you have to do it on the down low at first, you know, personally. But if not that, then, you know, some little part-time job or taking babysitting kids, if that's an option for you. Like, I would get creative. And in fact, if you go to, not right now, later, if you go to queenbeing.com/plan, PLAN, there's a whole ton of videos and downloads and things all about how to prepare yourself to leave. And also one of the videos is an interview I did with a lady who left herself. You know, she managed to get away from the narcissist, but she was, she had no money and he controlled all the money and she figured it out. And so the whole story is there and some really good tips there. So something to think about. Sorry, Dana, thoughts?
Yeah. Yes. So if they do owe you money, and here's the thing, because I've been in that situation too with that second person I dated. He owed me money and he was repaying me. I don't think he repaid all of it, but he repaid the vast majority of it. But I did have it in writing. But it was still really stressful because he was kind of dripping it to me slowly every month. And so every month seeing that check in the mail, it was just kind of this kick in the stomach. And it was just very, very stressful. So if you're in the position where you think you're not going to get it back, I would look at it as just tuition at the school of hard knocks. And frankly, that's some of the best money that you'll have ever spent. If you can learn all the lessons from that, it's better. You figure you go to college for a class, it's probably going to cost you a couple grand. I just think of it as this is a personal finance, mm-hmm. tuition, school of hard knocks.
That's a valid point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Valid point. Do you have another question pulled up? I have a couple of them here if you want.
Yeah, I do. Here's one from Louise who says, I'm currently in a relationship with a narcissist and I'm trying so hard to stick up for myself, but no matter what I suggest, it's always no. Any advice?
Yeah. Do you want to go first? Tell.
Sure.
Am I frozen or is it you?
No, I thought, I don't know. Something was frozen, but.
I think it was me. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess here's my take on that. When you say that you're in a relationship with them, are you dating or are you married? first and foremost. If you're dating, then kind of back to what I was saying earlier with boundaries is there comes a point where boundaries need to have some sort of end point, some sort of consequence. So if somebody keeps stepping over them, if there's not that ability to effectively communicate, if there's not that desire to work as a team, if there's not that emotional availability there, if there's not that respect for you, then there is no relationship present.
Right.
And it's, people will say, oh, well, you know, relationships take work and this kind of stuff. They do, but not like this. So respect, like these are the fundamental elements of what makes for a healthy relationship. And if you're having to try to teach somebody how to work as a team, how to respect you, how to negotiate, how to listen, how to do all this, that's a whole massive project. And I would also encourage you to back up a step and think about what is your purpose with dating? Because the purpose for most people with dating is to find a partner to spend the rest of their life with, right? To move towards marriage. Mm-hmm. The process of dating is all about discernment. So it's about sifting and sorting. Is this person for me? Are they not for me? It's not, oh, I really like, you know, a lot of qualities about, oh, and we've all been there. There's no judgment. Like, oh, I like a lot of qualities about this person, but they have these major relationship busting behaviors. We can't gloss over that. They've got to be able to get resolved in a reasonable time frame, or that's the sign that we need to drive on.
Indeed. Yep. I totally agree with everything you said. And I would say that the suggestions, the fact that you're suggesting things and are being told no, this is the only thing I would add to what Dana said is, where's the equality in the relationship? I mean, relationships should be more, you know, even when you have one person, like in a healthy relationship, one person works outside the home, let's say in this, you know, pretend relationship I'm talking about that's healthy. The other person stays home, takes care of the kids in the house or whatever. Well, at this point, it seems like you would naturally think in many cases that the person who makes the money should have the control of the money, but that's not how it works in a healthy relationship. See, because then in a healthy relationship, you both sit down and you talk about everything, because if you weren't staying home or the person weren't staying home, taking care of the kids in the house, well, then you'd have to pay somebody to do at least half of that, the kids part, and the house part might need it too, depending on how much the other person would work. So, you know, I guess my point is, even in a situation where only one partner officially works outside the house, both partners should have equal say over the money, or at least input into the money. So I would agree with everything that Dana said based on that alone. You know, just the fact that you're suggesting things. I know it's not just about money that you're making suggestions, but I went back to the money because we're talking about that here. But mm-hmm. But yes, I feel that way about everything in a relationship. That mm-hmm. certainly there will be some times where, you know, one person feels more strongly about something than the other person. And so the person who feels less strongly about it might be like, whatever, I don't really care if you send the kids to public school or private school, let's say, or I don't really care if you, you know, buy blue plates or red plates or whatever, you know what I mean? But maybe they feel really strongly that they want to only have like sterling silver silverware because they're allergic to whatever crap they make regular silver out of, you know, or something. I don't know. I'm just saying in situations where, you know, I don't care if you buy Bounty or generic paper towels, that's not a big deal. But I think I'm back to money again. I got to move on. All right. Anyway, I'm with you, Dana. Okay. I have a question from Melinda. Who says, how do you financially build when there's no one to get a loan from and no extra to save away? I want out financially, but I can't. Okay. I want out, but I financially can't leave, basically. And I would say this. I would say, first of all, like I talked about before, if you need to sneak around and get a job on the side, get to a PayPal account, you know what I'm saying? go pick up. There are different things you can do. You know, there are online bank accounts you can start. What I mentioned before, queenbeing.com/plan, that one video that I talked about is embedded there. This woman, she talked about things like she would save all the change from the grocery run or something. Like if he would only give her so much cash, she would save the change, or she would coupon and lose the receipt, you know. and it can be a ridiculously long thing to go that way. That's why I suggest finding a way to earn money on the sly if you have to, you know, or taking, you know, whatever you, if you do have to tell them that you're working, then tell them you're making half as much as you are and put half away or whatever, just to begin with. There are also things like loans, depending on the circumstances and the situation, but I know that's difficult when they probably have ruined your credit or you have no credit, and then you have sometimes no one else you can count on because narcissists push everyone away from you. So, but if what it comes down to is if there's a will, there's a way. I've seen women literally leave and go to shelters. And one in particular, off the top of my head, she may even be here right now. I'm not sure. I'm not going to say her name because I'm not going to out her, but she literally left her narcissist abuser, went to a shelter, got help, they helped her like figure out her job situation. She wasn't able to work while she was with this guy, and got the job situation figured out. Now she just recently moved into her own place, and she's just a bright light, happy, and took such a drastic step going from this beautiful home into this literally shelter. Nobody wants to do that, and I totally get it, but I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying I don't think she had any kids at the time, so I think that helps, right? It makes it a little bit less, but it's still horrible. Nobody wants to do that, but doing it was the only way she could get out, and so she did it. And so what I'm saying is there are programs out there, and this is going to be more true for women than men, sadly. There are some for men, but mostly for women, where you can go and you know, explain your situation, and they will help you get on your feet. They'll give you a place to sleep. They'll even give you job training. And someday when I'm a bazillionaire, if that ever happens, I will own one of those places and I will do it all for free. I don't know if I'll ever be a bazillionaire. We'll see. But if I am, or even a millionaire, I would be on it. I think I've always loved that idea of being able to have like some kind of giant ranch. It would be a ranch in my fantasy and people would work there and train there, and there would be lots of things, and it would be a really, yeah. So anyway, but there are programs out there that do offer things like that for women, especially in different types of abuse situations. So, and if you want to email me with like your zip code, I can try to find something local to you and send it back to you. So, Dana, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, another resource is go into your local bank if you have an account there, or maybe a bank where you don't have an account, and let them know, here's the deal. I am trying to leave, whatever, to whatever level you're comfortable telling them. I'm trying to leave a relationship. It's up to you if you want to say it's abusive or not. And I need to have my own, you know, I'm trying to build my credit. I'm trying to get financial independence from this other person. And I need help doing that. And so if you've never had credit before, or if your credits, they've ruined your credit, y'all can work out a plan of, okay, this is what we're going to do. Getting secured credit cards there in time. You know, if you're married to a person, let's say your religion doesn't allow divorce, or you're not ready to divorce, but this person is absolutely just destroying you financially, you can talk to an attorney about doing a financial separation where you're still married on paper, but you're financially separated. So it kind of stops the damage. So that's something to really think about.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
I've got another question here.
Tana, your hair's not cut short, is it?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
It's back, right? Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought. Somebody said Dana's short haircut is cute, and I was like, wait, what? I thought that was a ponytail. Okay, we're good. Okay, go on.
I might as well just cut my hair this length, because this is what I always wear it as. But the thing is, I'm so afraid to do that because my hair is so curly naturally. So if I cut it, it's
Yeah. I get it. I was saying.
I look like Kramer. Yeah.
My son has curly hair like that too. And his, both of my sons, their hair grows out. It's instead of down. Eventually one of them goes down, otherwise out. Okay.
Like Sideshow Bob.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Pretty much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out, apparently Jack Lumen is not able to post in the chat, and I'm trying to find out what happened and see if I can fix that right now. So bear with me. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I don't
well,
even
know. Here, I've got a question. Go mm-hmm. It's from Lil Ren, who says, I have a question. My friend's boyfriend uses his ADHD diagnosis as an excuse for his bad behavior. Is there a correlation with borderline personality disorder or narcissism and attention deficit disorder? Thank you.
Can I talk about that really quick?
Go for it.
So what I've seen, okay, let me just say this. I have ADHD, apparently, but it's not the hyperactive type, so probably ADD, but they don't call it that anymore. Anyway, I was diagnosed at 35. But no, I don't think so. But what I think in my case, if I were to really dig in, I would tell you that it was probably really CPTSD, that the effects of which played out as ADD in myself. So I do think in some cases you can see where someone with ADHD, especially someone who isn't particularly empathic or empathetic toward other people around them, maybe it could look that way. And maybe it can be comorbid, but I would not say that it's necessarily always correlated that way personally. And obviously I'm biased, but I do have one kid who is diagnosed ADHD, severe hyperactive type, and that has been a challenge. And some people would tell you that he lacks empathy in certain ways, my oldest. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a direct correlation, but I can imagine that it could be connected or not. It could increase the narcissism if such existed. But this is a non-clinical opinion because I am not a doctor. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I guess it would depend. I'm curious to know what his bad behavior is that he's trying to blame on ADHD.
Well, that's valid. Yeah.
If we're talking about like, yeah, I mean, there's impulsivity present with narcissism and sure. often borderline personality disorder and ADD. However, here's my take on mental health issues. And this is coming from a person who I've struggled with pretty debilitating depression my whole life. Mm-hmm. It is up to part of being an adult is to be responsible for ourselves. And if a person has any type of mental challenge, then part of being accountable and responsible for it is getting treatment. So we don't let it destroy and negatively impact our relationships with others. Mm. So for example, with me and my depression, it's real. It can be very debilitating and it can be very difficult for relationships. I realize this. So this is why I have had to make it a top priority to go visit my doctor, to get medication, to take medication, to stay up involved with my doctor if it stops working, you know, to eat fruits and vegetables, to get sunshine, to go for walks, to do what I, my part to be able to manage it. It's not fair for me just to go unmedicated and expect my partner to just be okay with me being deeply depressed and not wanting to get out of bed, not wanting to do anything. Right. So I know a lot of people stay in really toxic relationships because out of guilt, because they're like, oh yep. man, this person, they have, you know, they're depressed or they have ADD or they have, you know, whatever, you know, bipolar, some sort of other disorder. And so they feel responsible. Like I want to help them. I need to take care of them or mm-hmm. I should be more compassionate. They have this disorder. And so this is just going to be part of them being in my life. And the reality is it's okay to say, to have a cut point where you're like, you know what? This is relationship destroying behavior. Mm-hmm. And so it either we need to get it managed with medication or therapy or both. And if it can't be managed, then you're going to have to figure out some sort of way to set boundaries. And And if you're dating, this goes back to discernment of figuring out, okay, is this what you want in your life? Is this what you want for the next 40 years? And do you want to have children with, you know, with this person? And that can sound really harsh. And it's not saying that they're bad or wrong or any of this. It's being discerning about what you want in your life. And again, I struggle with severe depression. My current partner has like debilitating anxiety. And we both have our times where it's problematic, but we're seeking, we're each responsible and accountable for it. So it's not an excuse.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'll tell you something else really quick. Regarding ADD and ADHD, what I see is people who try to manage their symptoms, because there are things that happen. Like I sometimes forget things. And so instead of like forgetting to call my clients or whatever, I live by the Google Calendar now, you know, or like little things, you know, like if I get distracted, sometimes I just have to admit I'm distracted and I didn't hear what you said or whatever. But I think when someone, if someone cares about you, you know, they will, especially if you sit down and talk to them rationally and they are not toxic, they will try to manage their symptoms for, you know, if you show them that it's an issue. So I wanted to throw that out there. But again, like you said, Dana, I mean, there is the issue of like things, some things are beyond your, you know, if you are struggling with depression, you can only fake it so hard. You know what I mean? And I have had, I don't think I have at this point in my life, the same, I don't think I have clinical depression. Now I may have in the past, especially before I kind of woke up certain parts. I don't think I struggle with it in the same way that you do now. But I have my times and sometimes it's bad, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess, so I'm not implying that there is a way that you can stop all of the symptoms of every thing that goes on in your head, whether it's a disorder or, you know, a dysfunction or depression or whatever. But I do think that when we're talking about specifically ADHD, often there are things you can do to try to manage your symptoms, or I should say manage, but because like you can't change who you are, but you can do things to make life less hard. And I like to do that for myself just because I don't like to feel crazy and out of control. I like to feel like I have my arms around my life enough that I can breathe. And I, you know, I want certain things, you know, I'm probably not controlling enough when it comes to certain things. And that's probably just a reaction to being controlled for my whole life. So off topic, go on.
Yeah. No, and I think you're right. I've also been diagnosed with ADD and was diagnosed later on in life. And I also think that mine has to do with kind of early childhood stuff. It makes me wonder if a lot of people, that's kind of the root cause of it.
I really think that, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I really think there's something to that. I've done a lot of research, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I've done a lot of research into the neurology of it all. And it, to me, it looks very similar. It really, the symptoms of ADHD are very similar to the symptoms of CPTSD on some of the symptoms. And there's certainly some crossover. And in my opinion, based on some of the research I've done, which has been mostly researching other people's research, if we're being honest, and also with my own stuff, I really do think there's a connection. And I really do think that a large percentage of people with ADHD may really be dealing with symptoms or side effects of CPTSD. Go on. Sorry.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I do think that there is a correlation between unprocessed trauma and ADD. So yeah. And like Angie was saying, and I do the same thing too, where it's frustrating and it's time consuming, but it's learning. You have to learn strategies to set yourself up to succeed. Like Angie was saying, she lives off of her calendar. I do too. But you've got to be really proactive with figuring out, okay, I get it. It sucks. And it's an uphill climb and it's full of frustration, especially if people don't get it. I mean, but if we're talking blaming behavior like cheating or extreme stuff on ADD, impulsivity is there, but most people still have like a moral compass. So, and as, and again, too, it's important, everybody has deal breakers. Like you don't, it's not healthy to just stay in a relationship indefinitely while somebody else's behavior is causing a tremendous amount of damage to you in some way, shape or form. It's, you know, it's okay to say like, this needs to get handled or I'm going to have to leave, you know?
Yes.
I was so proud. I think I've mentioned this before. I was watching an episode of Hoarders. This was a long time ago. And, you know, most of the episodes, they've got the family and you've got people that have put up with, have been living with a hoarder and they can't move around. I mean, it's ruined. It's like ruined their children's lives. It's, you know, it's ruined them financially. It's ruined everybody. And I'm not saying that from a place of lacking compassion. It's a horrific disorder to be, you know, to have to, with hoarding and depression, there's a lot of it. And and there are times where I think, man, I it's scary how I'm like, I could see myself getting like that if I really let my depression go. But anyways, there was one episode where this woman had been dating this guy and she really liked him. And, but she'd never been over to his house. And of course, long story short, the show reveals that he's a hoarder. And she was very compassionate, but she had really good boundaries. And so she was like, I am sorry, I cannot have this in my life. And she ended the relationship. And it didn't matter to her if the guy was going to go into therapy, if he was going to work on it, whatever. For her, she was like, I don't want to always have to worry about, like, this is so extreme. You know, it would need years of therapy and years of being able to show that he had this under control. And, you know, she's like, I just don't want to risk it. And I don't want to combine my life and have this potentially resurface again. Like, I just, that's not what I'm signing up for. So I thought it was so fantastic versus so many of these other family members that just let it, it's kind of this misplaced compassion where they're like, well, they don't want to say anything because they don't want to upset the person. So they just let it go on and go on and go on until it just sinks everybody in the family.
Yeah. Yeah. So. That's unhealthy. And it's good that she stood up. And this is the thing. I think you're so right. And I think a lot of people are, I mean, how many of us have stayed with someone because we felt sorry for them at one point or another? I mean, you know, on some level. And yeah, I think it's it. And a lot of people will look down on people who don't really get it will look down on you sometimes. But I think I'm always in awe of people who have that much strength, you know, that they can stand up and go, you know what, this is not what I want. I wish I had that in the past. Now I think I'm getting there, you know, but on the plus side, I look at my kid and my daughter and I see her, being that strong already at 12 years old. And I'm like, woo. So we can help the next generation one way or the other, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. It's okay to say no. It's okay to have your limits with stuff. And so the other part of this hoarder story that was very interesting was the comments. Cause I was watching this show on YouTube. And all of the comments on YouTube, not all of them, but there was a lot that were really coming down hard on this lady. But they were very split. So people were either coming down hard on her for leaving. But then there were quite a few that were like, no, good for you for being like, this is my line. I can't have this. And I thought that was very interesting because there is this idea out there that it's only, you know, compassion and love kind of has no limits. And even if we destroy ourselves, and that's still somehow compassion and love, and it's not.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm completely with you on that. And I think that's a powerful statement. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, you know, it's important to realize, like, I think it was the Dalai Lama who said, you know, our compassion is only complete if it includes ourselves. And same thing with love. Like if it's so imbalanced where our compassion is hurting us, our compassion for somebody else is actually hurting us, or our love for somebody else is hurting us, then that's not compassion and it's not love.
Yeah. And up to a point, you know, this, I think personally, what something that I've advised clients, something that I've used in my own life on a regular basis is like, okay, if you're not ready to make the choice right now, set a time limit, you know? So for example, in the case of a hoarder, you might say, look, I'm going to help you clean this up, or we're going to bring somebody in to help you clean this up. And then we're going to whatever. And as we all know, hoarding has many other issues attached to it. And so a lot of times they won't allow it or whatever, but point being, like, set a time limit on how long you're going to tolerate the behavior or wait for change before. I find that to be very effective. So depending on the behavior and the nature of the change and the depth of the change, you know, maybe you give them 1 week or 90 days or a year, even at the very most, depending on the behavior and then what they need to change. You know what I mean? Like, if you're asking them to stop being a bum on the street and to have a house to live in, you might need to give them more than a week. You know what I mean? Right. But if it's like a hoarding situation, maybe you want to give them 90 days or whatever, as long as you can, if you can stand to deal with it for that long, you know, if you're not sure. And I think when you do something like that, then you not only empower the other person to decide, basically, you almost force them to decide for you in that situation. Because if they do what they need to do to keep you around and in the appropriate amount of time, then they've chosen you. And if they don't, then they've chosen that stuff in a way, you know? And so I think it, for those of us who sometimes struggle with setting proper boundaries, by setting up a situation like that, you're essentially giving that person the choice. Look, I can stay if you're willing to fix this, but if you're not, I have to go. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's helpful to everyone, but I'll throw it out there anyway.
I think that's a really valid point, you know, of having a time frame, because I've seen so many people hang on to these relationships for years and years and years and decades, even
decades,
hoping that things will somehow at some point be different. And, you know, so it's completely reasonable to just say, yeah, I'm not going to tolerate this in my life. I love you. I love us, but we can't have this. Like, this will destroy us. So what's the plan for us handling this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And this is also, of course, as you know, even someone who has a mental health issue or something like hoarding going on, they can be healthy enough that they can be rational about these things. And I don't know about hoarding, but mental health issues. And if not, you know, they need to get help, and that's part of the deal, I guess, you know what I mean? But what my point is that someone who absolutely refuses to compromise and someone who absolutely take me as I am, which look, I agree with take me as I am, right? And if you don't like me, y'all know where the stuff is, but I agree with that up to a point. But when you're living in the same house with someone or you're in a long-term relationship with someone and there are certain things that you just can't, like hoarding, I think hoarding would be a deal breaker for a lot of people. There has to be, you can't, you know, Dana, like you were talking about, the woman that you were talking about, she knew she couldn't live with this forever. And so she said, you know what, I gotta go. And I think, I don't know what my point was. I got distracted. Anyway, let's move on. I was making a point. Okay. You know, I just realized we're a little bit over and I know that we both have things to do, but if you want to grab one more question before we wrap up, we can do that. Or
okay, let me see if I can come across. Do you have one handy?
I'm looking. I do want to say, Jack Lumen, I think I fixed your thing. So if you could test it out at some point, that would be awesome. I think someone may have, in a previous stream, put you on timeout or something, but it put you in the hidden users. Okay, here we have one from Connie Jones. She says, question, bit of a different question, but my mom, the narcissist, is dying any day now. I'm feeling very uncertain on how to deal with this and what to expect. Well, that's a big question. Okay. This is what I would say to you. I don't know if you are currently in contact with her or not. If you are, then I would just, you know, if you have anything left to say, say it. And if, you know, and just, I guess, I'll come back to that. If you're not in contact with her, and this is the issue, and this is tough, but if you're not in contact with her, you haven't been in contact with her, and you don't feel that you have anything left to say, then take a deep breath and keep going. I know that's harsh. Some people would want to go to the funeral. Some people would want to go to the bedside. I don't know if I have the best advice on this. I would love to hear your thoughts on this one, Dana.
So what was the situation
again? Her narcissist mother is going to be dying soon, and she doesn't know how to deal with this or what to expect. And I feel like I'd have to think about that one a little more than I have at this point. But I would say, in general, I would say you don't owe anyone anything. And if you're not in contact, you can continue to not be in contact unless you want to go and attend the funeral and or bedside situation. Dana, thoughts?
Yeah, I guess it depends on like her health.
Yeah.
How lucid she is and kind of what her health status is. You know, if you, I guess I would encourage you to view it from the standpoint of what do you need at this point to kind of have closure and have peace? And it's okay. It's okay to say, you know what, this woman was absolutely horrific to me my whole life. And, you know, I don't want to see her. There's nothing, we have no relationship. And there's no reason to do that. That's okay. And it's also okay if you decide you want to go visit for an afternoon and whatever, but kind of expect the unexpected. She could be mean and cruel, or she could kind of say things that you're hoping she's going to say, mm-hmm. Which might just be a part of the manipulation. You know what I mean? Like, you really kind of have to have your emotional shields up.
Yes.
Especially at end of life, because people's behavior can be really erratic. And
I can tell you this, I'm not in contact with mine, and I personally will not be anymore, even then. So I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying it is what it is. I would like to, Dana, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I found some good advice here from our people in the chat. I'd like to, from the community. Annette says, go with your gut. Go with what's in your heart. MB says her mom can take her back in a minute. Scary. Oh, wait, I think that was something else. UNA says when a narcissist is dying, expect the unexpected. Even your own feelings might surprise you, and that's okay. And that's true. Hey, Freedom Lee. Freedom Lee. Oh, that was not advice about that. Okay. There's some good advice here in the chat, so definitely check that out as well. Dana, you have some really valid thoughts on this. If you have any more, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to throw that in.
I just wanted to add one more thing, because a lot of people, I see this too, where they have, especially with a parent, mm-hmm. Who all of a sudden is diagnosed with something terminal, and they're like, oh, I don't know what to do or say. And then boundaries completely go out the window. They go into panic mode. They think, oh my goodness, this parent of mine is dying, so I need to take care of them full time, and either move in with them or have them move in with me. And it's okay. I guess the point of that is it's okay to have limits, mm-hmm. even with the person who's dying. You know, I was a former nurse. I did hospice for quite a while, and I went to go take care of my dad at the end of his life for a couple months. Yeah. And it's a lot. And it was very, very tense. And so it was a lot of family meetings and dividing up responsibilities and coming up with a plan and all of that. So if you're thinking that you want to be a part of giving care, mm-hmm. at that point, then getting a plan that involves really healthy boundaries and not thinking, okay, I just need to be the one to do all of this. Even if you're a former hospice nurse, like I was, to just be like, this is just too much. I need full-time help from other people.
Yeah.
So
it's rough. Yeah. And Be Real says to me, what will I do at that point? And unless there is some reason that my brother is the golden child in that family, and I was removed from the will when I was 21. And I won't be called. And if I am called, I'll consider whether I'll stop by or not. But I probably won't be called. My brother will be the one handling it, I'm sure. And so now let me say this. If I ever found out that she was homeless or she was in some way, there was something that I could do to help her not be homeless or, something like that, maybe I would do that just because I don't think anybody should be homeless. I mean, I've helped people who I don't even know IRL to feed them and other things like that when I knew that they were struggling financially. So I'm not heartless and cruel, but just because I wouldn't let her be homeless, it doesn't mean I would put her in my house. You know what I'm saying? I have limits is all I'm saying. I don't know what I'll do at that time. I really don't know. I think I won't go. So, but I'll find out and I'll let you know when that happens at some point. So, yeah.
It's okay. And yeah, I guess, and just it's okay to, and I would encourage you to get involved in some grief counseling. Hospice normally offers free grief counseling. So to call, if the hospice agency is involved, to call them and talk to them about setting some of that up and to get into it now.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
And it's going to be a full range of emotions that comes up when a person that you've had a very tumultuous relationship with passes. I think for a lot of people, it can be, yeah, it's just the finality of realizing things aren't going to be different, and they just are what they are.
Oh, here's some. I don't know why, but I want to pull this up because Connie, been no contact for 3 years. Flying monkeys are protecting her from me, which is a major joke. She's in and out. I saw her once, and she said, "Sorry, I don't have anything to say." So I don't see the rest of it. But oh, my sister-in-law is saying I'm not allowed. Connie, if you don't want to go, if you feel like you're done and you've said what you had to say, please don't feel guilty. Let your just let them. Excuse me, just let them have it. I mean, if you feel like you need to say something else, then go and do what you need to do. But don't, if it's about feeling guilty because someone is guilt tripping you or something like that, please know that you're not alone. I will be probably in a similar boat in at some point in the future. Give yourself, oh. UNA said she was the sole caregiver for both of her narcissists. Both refused any help, even hospice. So it was all on her. She thought she'd know what she felt when they passed, and she was totally wrong. Again, I haven't been there yet. Dana has with her father, so Dana's advice is probably the best advice the two of us have to give you on this. So yeah. Anyway, Dana, any other thoughts before we wrap up for today?
I guess that's about it. There was a comment here about just the importance of, or I guess introducing the concept of post-traumatic growth. And that's maybe a high point we can kind of end on that while we do talk a lot about the consequences or the aftermath of abuse, which tends to be either PTSD or CPTSD, there is a concept called PTG, which is post-traumatic growth, and it's the growth that only happens as a result of trauma.
Is this a new term? Because I've never heard it and I love it.
Oh, really? No,
Yes.
it's been around. It's kind of the foundation for positive psychology.
Oh.
So it's when, because before the concept was the goal with a lot of therapy in general was to return a person to like their baseline level of functioning.
Right.
Well, right? Like, and who's to say that person's baseline was ever really working for them to begin with? And so
Yeah.
this whole post-traumatic growth is the ability to meet and exceed that
Yeah.
previous baseline.
That's crazy. I've been talking about that concept, but calling it something else for years. I thought I made it up. So, yay for me.
You just knew it intuitively.
I
Yeah.
did.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I say all the time, I say that the silver lining to having gone through this kind of trauma or any kind of trauma that you're able to get through And then when you take the time to heal and evolve yourself, then you can really become better than you would have been otherwise. And I see this all the time in our community. People are much more connected. People become more self-aware than your average person would anyway, because they never had to go through that. And so they don't, the average person doesn't need to dig that deep and to know themselves that well and to be that connected on various levels, spiritually, physically, mentally, otherwise. And I find it to be incredibly satisfying, and again, the silver lining of all this stuff, you know. And so I love that there's a term for it. Thank you for sharing that with me. I will have to research it and make a video.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, everybody, we are wrapping up because we are over time. I am so sorry, Dana. I did not mean to go so far over today. We have had it's been a really good one today. Thank you. And thank you for everyone in the chat. We will see you next week over on Dana's channel, Thrive After Abuse, right here on YouTube. If you want to make sure that you are connected to both channels, thank you, Meg. And so hit subscribe and the bell notification on each channel so you are notified when we go live. Otherwise, we will see you. Thank you, Flaca, Roller Girl, Connie, Jen, MBT, UNA, Ponderosa, everybody. Yes. We'll see you soon. Thanks, Dana. Thanks again.
Okay, see you next week.
All right, see you then. Bye. Okay, here we go.